This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a visit with Tennessee's poetic maven, Maggie Margaret Britton Vaughn, at her home in the village of Bellbuckle, where she waxes eloquent about her immersive creative life. The diversity of Maggie's expressions includes decades of writing lyrics for Nashville country stars, including Ernest Tubb, Charlie Weaver, and Loretta Lynn. Her lifelong friendship with Minnie Pearl remains as one of her true creative treasures, along with a lifelong adoration for Nashville's mother church, the Ryman Auditorium. Maggie is celebrating her 26th year as the state of Tennessee's official poet laureate. Close to her heart is her bicentennial poem, written back in 1996, that remains today as fresh and timeless as yesterday. Come along and join Maggie for a riveting and hilarious hour of tales of her amazing 83-year journey, chronicling a passionate love for life in the South.
Here's the Flat and Scruggs Grand Ole Opry Show, brought to you by Martha White Mills, millers of Martha White hot rise flour, cornmeal, and...
My name is Margaret Britton Vaughn, but everybody calls me Maggie. I'm in Bellbuckle, Tennessee. I've lived here since 1982.
So what brought you to Bellbuckle?
Well, I'm going to tell you. I believe in signs. I have followed signs all of my life. Mm-hmm. Well, the first time I had a sign was I was 5 years old. My Aunt Martha came over here to buy material. Back then, stores downtown were shops that sold good merchandise. Today, it's, you know, fun stuff. Souvenirs and art. And I didn't care anything about the material. I was 5 years old. But the sound of Bellbuckle, I thought, what? Bellbuckle? I didn't know then, but we're the only Bellbuckle in the whole world. So I didn't think about it just now and then, you know. And so in the late 50s or early 60s, Jimmy Dean had a TV show. And he said, today's special guest is Molly B. from Bellbuckle, Tennessee. And I thought, golly, there's that Bellbuckle. So then I was working for the newspaper after I got out of school and college, and they called me to come work at the Banner and Tennessean in their advertising department. Back then, if you bought an ad in one paper, you got it in both of them. And I was there for 17 years. And I took a night class during that. And I walked, during the break, I got up and walked toward the back of the room. And this young man smiled at me and said, hello, Budden. And I just stopped in my tracks. I said, my daddy called me that. I said, mama told me all my life daddy called me Budden. I said, he died. He was a fireman killed on duty in 1939. I was born in 38. I was 9 months old when he died. And I said, what's your name? And he said, Winfred. I just stood there like a stone. I said, that was my daddy's name. Wow. Now, that's a name that you don't hear. Mm-hmm. And we became dear, dear friends. So one weekend, we used to do what we called junking. We'd go out in antique shops and yards and buy junk. And sometimes we'd buy something good. Later in life, I bought something good when I had a job making a little money. But anyway... I came to Bellbuckle. It was in Bellbuckle. And we drove in, and the buildings were half empty then. And I said, Winfred, this is where I'm supposed to be in life. It's called to me all these years. I went back and quit my career. Never been to Shelbyville before. It's our county seat. Drove there, saw a bank, pulled in, walked in. I said, my name's Maggie Vaughn. I found a little house in Bellbuckle. I don't have a job. I don't have any savings. I don't have any income. I have nothing. But if you'll finance that little house, I'll never go bankrupt. And there was an old man standing there. And he said, give her anything she wants. And he walked out. And I said, who's that old man playing a joke on me? And the banker said, he owns most of the bank. How do you want your money? And he pulled a piece of paper out and he gave me the money right then to buy that house.
Wow.
And since then, every house and building they financed, I didn't have to pay anything down. And now, though, it's all banks have sold out to big profit people. So, but anyway, they're still good to me. So, Minnie Pearl. Minnie was like a mother to me. My mother was conservative career-wise because she had a hard time raising my brother and myself. My brother was born 3 months after my daddy died. And she worked 7 days a week trying to put food on the table. So when I said, I'm going to quit my job and move to Bellbuckle, she said, are you crazy? You're giving up everything in that little old town? I said, I can't help it. In the meantime, I had told Minnie Pearl, who was like a mother to me, and she said, Maggie, go for it. You're a writer. You go for it. She helped me get my first book published. Minnie Pearl did. So I moved here, and I have never regretted it. I've been here since 1982. And the thing about Bellbuckle, it's a community. Now, I fell in October and broke my ankle, and I was already in pretty bad shape. I'll be 83 next week, I think. And I had to be an emergency operation that day, and I had 3-4 plates put in to hold me together. And now I have a hard time walking, so I don't get out very much. But I do go if someone wants me to speak, honey. I go if someone takes me.
That's so cool. So you're a poet, right?
I'm a poet. And I write short stories, and I'm a songwriter. I've written for Loretta Lynn for years, Conway Twitty and Ernest Tubb and Charlie Louvin. But you see, back then you weren't making much money as a songwriter. Now they make millions. So I need to get back in it because I've got songs I've written that I need to show somebody. Loretta always puts the melody to them. She says I only have 2 melodies. 1 melody, I just speed it up and slow it down. I can't write a melody, but I can write a strong lyric. So country music is my love. It gave me my voice. Country music. I learned a long time ago, you write what people relate to, they'll buy the record and they'll buy the book. And everybody relates to every book I've written. And I make sure that I write it, but I write it from the heart, though I don't do it on purpose to make them buy it. I write my feelings. Well, my feelings are their feelings.
Give us the name of a book that you'd recommend that we buy.
Well, my most popular book is called The Light in the Kitchen Window. When you grow up in the South, and see, I was born in 38, the kitchen window light stayed on all the time till the last person was in. Now, if you had a porch, the porch light was on also. And the last person, the lights went out, last one that came in. Like if I stayed in my aunt, she had 5 children. And so I called it The Light in the Kitchen Window. And I wrote about the old country school, the country store, the things that we grew up on in the South. And people from the North, they can't get enough of it. I guess they just want to have that feeling of the South.
Mm-hmm. I think he's got something that
Is that you, Mama?
Read that for us.
Oh, Lord, I tear up at this one. I read this one on Pickers, but they only recorded about half of it, which brought people here. Just hear me do the other half. It's called Is That You, Mama? Is that you, Mama, who just put a hand to my brow? And today, when I couldn't work things out, was that you who showed me how? Was that you, Mama, who just turned on the porch light? You always had one on to keep me safe at night. Mama, was that you by the stove cooking beans and cornbread? And was that you during the night standing right beside my bed? Was that you, Mama, who knocked that old bumblebee away? And you who called me in to supper when I came in from play? I know I felt you kiss my knee when I bumped in on the chair. And Mama went on knelt to pray. Was that you listening there? Was that you, Mama, or was that you? Did God let you come home to me? Or maybe you never left, I was just too blind to see. Or was it I felt so bad today and you knew I needed you and God let you visit for just a day or two? Well, Mama, I'm okay now. You tell the Lord I said hi. Was that you, Mama, that just kissed me bye? Whew. People come, and I have to read it over and over and over, and they all cry and get the handkerchiefs out, and I tune up. I write from the heart. What I do is an idea will come in my mind, Well, I'll start writing, then I run it through my heart. Then after I've done all that I'm going to, I'll run it back through my mind to make sure it works. And I've been so lucky because I was Sport Laureate when we had the bicentennial here, and I wrote the official bicentennial poem. I wrote the official woman suffrage poem. I've written the official, I don't know how many official poems for Tennessee. They're in the blue book.
So you're still the official poet.
Yes, I am.
Well, of Tennessee, right?
Yes, we were going to get one last summer when COVID hit. And I hope we'll get one pretty soon because we need another one. But this time they're just going to get someone for like 5 years, 3 or 5 years, where I've had it 26.
Wow. Maggie, do you mind sharing another one of your stories?
Okay, a poem or a story?
Another poem.
Well, let me see. What have I got over there? Which one? Well, they're all over there. Let's see. You know, we played... Are you still on? We played marbles when I was growing up. In the backyards, we'd draw that circle. And one day, one of the mothers, they back then the mamas, except my mama worked all the time. The other mothers had money and they didn't have to work.
And this is in Murfreesboro?
No, this is in Gulfport. Okay. My mother remarried after I was about 3 years old. And an older man, and I think it was for security, you know. But it didn't last for 10 years. But the best thing that ever happened to me is he was transferred to Gulfport to the VA. He was a physical therapist for the VA. Well, see, when I was growing up in Murfreesboro in 1938, a girl was supposed to finish high school, get married, have babies. That was it. And I knew, honey, when I was 5 years old, I was going to be a writer and do none of that other. Although I dated a lot and nearly married, but then I kept saying in the back of my, nope, 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 don't do it, don't do it. Well, anyway, when we moved to Gulfport, honey, it was wide open. I mean, strippers and gambling and thinking and, I mean, just real liberal. And so I grew up with conservative and liberal, which is good, thank goodness. But this is called, now this one's a little more deeper than the Is That You Mama. It's called The Grass Came Back. And the reason I did this is because when one of the mothers said to the other, I don't think the grass will ever grow in the backyard where we played marbles and basketball. And she said, oh, yeah, the grass will come back when the children are gone. And I remember that all those years. The grass came back to the dirt, her knuckles hard to the ground and squinted eyes aimed at the circle drawn with a stick. The grass came back to the dirt where Billy's clubhouse held secrets of tenfold treasures and buried Aggies, one from the circle drawn with a stick. The grass came back to the stump where Bubba pulled his short pants and preached to wide-eyed faces who licked popsicles and stood near the circle drawn with a stick. Billy's mama said it would come back. It always comes back when there's no children playing barefoot and games that barefoot children play. Billy's mama's gone, but she was right. The grass came back. No sign we were ever there except for the rusty hook that clung to the oak that shaded the circle drawn with a stick. And, you know, I went back there after I'd moved back to Tennessee and to visit the old neighborhood. And the only thing that was left was that old rusty basketball rim, and the grass had come back. And I thought, I've got to write that. So I just write memories and the auction. You want me to read another one?
Sure, yeah.
Going, going, gone, and the gravel hit the board. People fill the yard to see what they could afford. The old rusty dinner bell that could hardly be picked up is now riding in the back of someone's pickup truck. The china with the little flowers carefully hand-painted on is wrapped in old newspapers and headed for its new home. A plow from the field will become a mailbox. An oak leaf butter mold just came on the auction block. A trunk and its belongings are being rummaged through, finding yellow, torn photographs and a worn-out baby shoe. An oval-filled cold table radio with a busted dial light that brought in the Grand Ole Opry each week on Saturday night is not going for much, just what's in someone's pocket. But the bidding's going high for a heart-shaped golden locket. Things we all loved yesterday, things we all grew up on, are souvenirs from the home base and are gone. So, see, I write what's going on. And this was, my first book was about the Grand Ole Opry. And Minnie helped me get that one.
Do you have that book here?
You know, I'm out of it. I probably have one out in the studio, maybe. I don't know.
That's okay.
But it was, I wrote it from the voice of the Ryman Auditorium, talking about her children. See, the Ryman Auditorium is my favorite building in the whole world. You say, Maggie, you need to travel more. And I say, I don't care. My favorite, my mind's been all over the world. It's my favorite building. And I used to be backstage on Saturday night at the Opry with all the Opry people every Saturday night because I knew them. And I was writing songs then. So I wrote it from the voice talking about all of her children. It was called 50 Years of Saturday Nights. It's when the Grand Ole Opry was 50 years old. Then later I updated it and called it Grand Ole Saturday Nights, and it sold out. I've got to redo it. I've got to, so many of them have died. Minnie's gone, and so many of them that I knew have passed away.
How did you come to meet Minnie Pearl?
Well, when I moved back to Nashville from Gulfport, Jim Denny was a big publisher on Music Row. And I went to him and I said, I want to write jokes for Minnie Pearl. And he said, well, let's call her. So he called her. And she said, I'd love to meet Maggie. But she says, I've got so much material, I don't need it, but I want to meet her. Well, that Saturday night, she was backstage and I was backstage and she met me. We immediately became dear, dear friends through the years. And I was in her home a lot. And matter of fact, she did a pilot TV show in Hollywood years ago. And she gave me her script and wrote on there about me being a writer. And the people that were here are associated with the Opry, some of them. And they had to have it for their office. And they said, Maggie, we promise you after we get through, it will go to a museum. And I thought, well, if you're going to do that and take care of it, because it was hard to let go, because it's hard to let go of Minnie.
Yeah.
At her funeral, it was packed, and the line was huge. And when I got to Henry, her husband, he grabbed me and he said, oh, Maggie, Minnie loved you. And he didn't say that to anybody else, you know. She was like a mama, mm-hmm. and advised me all the time, and cut up with me, and we'd go eat all that and together, and I accepted some awards for her that she was given when she couldn't be there, and it was just wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful.
Yeah.
And of course, writing with Loretta. I've been writing with Loretta for over 50 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, I was in Nashville, and the Wilburn brothers, I don't know if you're familiar with Teddy and Doyle Wilburn.
I've heard.
Okay. Well, they had publishing company and a company that sent acts out on the wall, on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, Maggie, got a girl coming in this week we're going to put you with. Y'all write so much alike. And they said, she's got a song right now in the charts. And I said, oh, what's the song? And they said, Honky Tonk Girl. I said, oh, that's Loretta Lynn. Well, that Saturday night, Loretta, I was backstage, and she must have said to one of them, which one's Maggie? And she came over and she introduced herself and she said, I'm Loretta Lynn, Maggie. We're supposed to write together. We wrote together all these years. We still write together.
Oh, cool.
And she...
Does she come over to see you or how do you get
Well,
there?
I go over to her house.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, she's been, not to Bellbuckle, but in Nashville, we'd see each other. Loretta got up in age, too. She's something like 6 or 7, 8 years older than me. And I'll be 83 next week. So she's almost 90, I'd say. But she said one time, if I can count on one hand my best friends, it would be you, you know.
That's really and, touching.
I mean, we have great respect. And Doolittle, we called him Doo, of course, her husband. He kept my car running and everything else. I mean, he was so good to me. And we just had a wonderful relationship. And now and then she would play a big casino in Biloxi, which is right next to Gulfport. So
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, I'll kill two birds with one stone. I'll go visit friends, go to the concert. Well, most of the time I'd go backstage and just be with her. But one night I said, I'm going to go out and sit in the audience and listen to you a little while. She, right in the middle, stopped the show, talked about me for 15 or 20 minutes.
Wow.
About how I was one of the first women songwriters in Nashville and how I'd written so much and we were so dear. And I just went on and on and on. I thought, well, boy, that's nice, you know.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So, I mean, when you get some attention, it's nice. Mm-hmm. And since I've been Fort Laureate, you just won't believe what's happened to me. It's the things that I've had, been and invited and written, and it's just unbelievable. You know, I don't... let me give you another story. Have you got time?
Yes, and I was just thinking, let's do not a poem, but a story or a segment from one of your books.
Well, hand me Mary Buck Above and Me. A gentleman and his wife came this week, last week. He was affiliated with the Sequoia. That was the presidential yacht for all the presidents.
I know it. Yeah, that was Roosevelt's yacht.
Yes. Roosevelt signed the documents, and Truman dropped the bomb, signed the... I mean, he was in charge, and the historian. Mm-hmm. Well, when Jimmy Carter was president, he kind of fell in disrepair, and he went to an auction house. And I think this gentleman, his name is Tim, and a friend of his got it and remodeled it. Of course, the first ladies were always the first lady when they were on the boat, were the presidents. But he made me, I've got a plaque right there, I haven't framed it yet, and pictures of the boat and all of that and a letter, made me first lady of that boat right now.
Cool.
So that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Get a ship named after you.
Yeah.
Because, Lord, I've had a lot of crap named after me. I mean, my teachers were all said, my English teachers, you'll never be a writer because you can't spell. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't spell now, but it was a history teacher that took me under wing, and it was helped me. My mother had a 10th grade education. All she could think of was making a living, you know, mm-hmm. and so I didn't get much help from the family. And my family came, they were all farmers, agrarians, and they couldn't have cared less about poems or anything. But after I became Fort Laureate, they kind of perked up a little. Of course, I don't know they knew what it was, but Mama ever, when I told her I was leaving my job, she didn't speak to me for 2 months.
Oh, wow.
Oh, she was so mad. And boy, Minnie was saying, go, 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 Maggie, you can do it.
That's right.
But Mama just didn't, like I say, we grew up poor. Mm-hmm. And she thought, to give up a career, I've been there 17 years at the Nashville Papers. So, but I went to New York City one time on vacation, and it was in June. And I saw a world going around, and I wasn't in it. Writers and artists and museums. I did it all. And I came home, and I thought, I'm going to declare my independence. On the 4th of July, I went in and quit my job. I was working at in Nashville for the Banner in Tennessee and okay. advertising. And my boss said, good grief, Maggie, you're giving up your job. We're in a recession. I said, what's a recession? I didn't even know. I mean, I didn't care. I was leaving, and I left. Mm-hmm. And I haven't regretted it 1 minute, ever. Being here is wonderful. Did you find...
Rebecca?
Oh, see, I had COVID, and I can't remember stuff. My short-term memory. I think several people in Bell Buckle have had that. I don't know if it's because we're all close and got the same bug or something, but you short-term memory, I hope I get it back, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see. Oh, let me think. Let me put my mic down.
Sure.
So I can flip through here. This one's called Pecans. This is a book about my brother and my mother and myself growing up in Murfreesboro and Gulfport. And it's called Mary Rebecca Bubba and Me. And I wrote about all of us in here. Mama once had a job overseeing the gift shop in the Washington Pecan Manufacturing Company. The shop sold starfish, seahorses, seashells, and other souvenirs from the Gulf of Mexico. Mr. Washington shipped out pralines, pecans, and log candies all over the world. When people came to Gulfport, they always stopped by the shop and purchased gifts to send back home. Mama used to say when Yankees would come in and ask for pecans, they would say, "Do you have any pecans?" Mama would laugh and say, "No, but we have mighty good slop jars." I'm not sure they ever got Mama's joke. So, I mean, I write humor a lot, and I write sad, and I just write my life. And, you know, I wrote in here about white trash. Mama always say, "Don't get near the white trash." But her, they had the best food. All the fancy people ate fancy food. And I wanted that good old white trash food. So I ran around with them. Any other question? I mean, just...
Oh, this is great.
Like I say, I will write till they drop me in the big hole in the ground. And some friends of mine in Bellbuckle are making my coffin. It's going to be wood. And on the top's going to be a big old Hershey bar. I love Hershey bars. And I'm diabetic, but honey, I eat about three a day. And people are going to sign their names and put anything they want on there. And then they're going to lower her down. And I'm going to have my funeral at the banquet hall where Heather works. And because I don't want a church funeral. I want to do the 23rd song and sing a few gospel songs and get up and tell stories. I want to laugh. And there's a song called "When I Lead the Parade." It's, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's about someone being in the hearse. The hearse is leading the parade. As they carry me out, I want that one played in the banquet hall. And I'll be buried in Murfreesboro because when my daddy died, the city gave Mama 4 plots because Mama was expecting my little brother, and I'd already been born. So Mama's there, and Daddy's there, and my brother married and had family, so he just bought family plots in his town where he's living. So I'm going to have 2 plots and have me a big old tombstone, Fort Laurie, and all that, and at the end it's going to say, "Books still available."
I love it.
What if I didn't sell my books? I wouldn't eat, you know? And so I'm going to say books still available. I don't know. I just kept that dream. And I, you know, I talk to teachers and students all the time. And I really kind of get on to teachers. I'll tell them because I do a lot of in-services. And I say, you know, I know you think that your class is the most important one they're going to have, but it's not. And I said, if they can't get the right verb sometime, you know, but they can draw beautiful pictures on their homework, send them to an art class. Find what they can do and help them with that. I said, get them through the other, but help them find what they were born to do. Everybody, I don't care who you are, is born with a gift. Some people find it and some don't. The ones that don't find it are usually miserable. But I found mine at an early age.
That's really great. Can you share one more story with us from your books?
Yeah. Hold on. I got to put my mic down. Yeah. After Mama passed away, my mother and I always went to my brother's who lived in Gallatin, Tennessee, right before Christmas and exchanged gifts. Well, the Christmas after she died, I went without Mom, of course, and it was real sad. One niece gave me $20. Another niece gave me $20. And my brother gave me $50 and a gift. So I put $40 of it in one pocket and $50 in the other. And the thing that hurt me the most losing Mama, one of the things, was I wasn't there when she died. I had pneumonia. And I had gotten up long enough, I'd had it all week, to go speak in Cookeville, Tennessee and come right back and get in the bed. And but I did go see Mama, and I knew she was bad off, but I didn't know she was that bad. And the nurses who knew me, of course, said, "Maggie, go home and go to bed, or you know, pneumonia will kill you." So I called every hour to check on her. And about 10 that night, I'd gone to bed, and the phone rang, and they said, "Get here quick." I jumped up, and I just started there, but I didn't make it. She had passed, and she couldn't get her eye. They couldn't get her eyes shut. Everybody tried, and after my brother came, I called him. She only had the two of us. After he was there and talked to her, they were able to close her eyes. And I said, "Mama couldn't close her eyes; her children were there." But it Oh, I it bothered me that I did not was not there when she died. And I think that, because I was there that day, I think she waited. I don't think Mama wanted to die in front of us. So I'm talking to Mama after I've left the my brother's house that Christmas after she passed away. I said, well, Mama, I've got $40 in one pocket and $50 in the other. And I said, I'm going to stop in Lebanon because you can cut through Lebanon to here. And there's an antique shop there called Cuz, and I love it. And I said, I'm going to find something for $40. Well, I stopped at Cuz, and he had three floors of antiques, but it was expensive. Didn't find one thing. And I can't, if I need to stop, tell me, you know. I came back down the stairs, and under a table, I saw something under a tablecloth. And I thought, I wonder what that is. And I opened the curtain, the tablecloth up, and it was a Ryman Auditorium painted by Mama's old boyfriend. And I collect Ryman Auditoriums. I got all kinds of them in the house. I thought, well, there it is. There it is. I picked it up, and I took it up to the cashier. And some of the men that worked there were standing there, and I said, how much is this? And they said, oh, how did you find that? Everybody's wanted it, and he hid it. He wants it in for himself. And I said, well, when would he be back? He'd gone to supper or lunch or something. And they said, well, probably 15, 20 minutes, but he's not going to sell it. So he came back in. And I said, cuz, this is a picture that my mama's old boyfriend painted. And I said, I collect Ryman Auditoriums, and I lost Mama this year. Is there any way you'll sell this picture, this painting? He said, what will you give me? Well, I thought, well, it'll be ungodly. And I said, it's your call. It's your picture. He says, how about $40? That's what I had put aside. Honey, I got that thing, put it in the car, drove to Shoney's and cried in my chicken fettuccine. It just nearly killed me, you know, because Mama's giving me a signal again. I get them from her all the time. So I've got that Ryman hanging in my bedroom in there, and along with other Rymans. And so things like that happen to me all the time.
I have to interrupt you for a moment.
Yeah.
So I flew into Nashville a couple days ago.
Okay.
And I had all afternoon free. I could do anything I want.
Yeah.
The city gave me a pass for entry to any museum.
Yeah.
Any place. And you know where I spent all afternoon?
What? The Ryman?
The Ryman Auditorium.
Honey?
That's the only place I wanted to go.
Oh, my God. I don't know if that... Let's see. I don't think I put that in this book. This is about old country music that I wrote with someone else. Also, but the Ryman is just my favorite book.
Well,
my favorite place.
Well, there's a palpable energy there.
Oh, it's the walls are talking to
yes.
you. Yes. And it's unbelievable. I mean, I feel, every time I've gone in there since then, I feel many.
Yeah.
And all of them. Loretta, of course, still living. But I feel Roy Acuff. I love Roy Acuff.
Well, but their energy is palpable.
Oh, it's right there on that Ryman stage. And that's where I used to be all the time.
Yeah.
I was thinking I had that in here, but maybe I haven't. Here it is.
Perfect.
All right, I found it.
Okay, microphone.
Microphone. See my short-term memory.
That's right. Well, I'm your short-term memory.
The Ryman. Guitar, banjo, and fiddle strings tied people together and pulled them toward the mother church of country music. Music was a refuge to those who worked in coal mines, factories, farm fields, and behind screen doors that led to newsprint papered walls, pennies saved in fruit jars lined copper roads that led to the big auditorium where poor people sat and young children slept on old tabernacle oak pews that harmonized with rich mahogany. Music seasoned with timber from old Cumberland River boats brought magic to the people looking for a rabbit's foot to make life easier. They came by train, bus, horse, car, truck, wagon, and foot. A red velvet curtain lifted blue hearts, and people with stars in their eyes heard music that told their stories, and it happened in Nashville, Tennessee, in a place called the Ryman. It's hard for me to read that one. You know, it's so Samuel to me.
I love it.
And the Ryman, I mean, of course, I was there before they ever remodeled it. Mm-hmm. There was no air conditioning. And I also wrote a poem, I don't know what it's in, about them leaving the Ryman and going to the new place. I wrote a poem about that. I mean, country music was my life and still is. And I mean, it tells stories. And finally, in 1960s, the only people selling records was country music stars. And like Perry Como and Rosemary Clune, all the big stars from Hollywood were coming to Nashville to record. Can I tell you a Rosemary Clooney story?
Of course you can.
Oh, honey, I got full of stories. I worshipped Rosemary Clooney. There's just something about her. Her voice, her singing, her words. I worshipped her. So when I was in high school, on the weekends, if I was going to go somewhere, Mom would say, Rosemary Clooney's on TV tonight, and I'd stay in. Well, I'd wait for her to come on. She wouldn't come on. And I finally caught on, I'm kind of slow, that she was tricking me. So, and Rosemary Clooney came years ago to the TPAC, our Tennessee Performing Arts Center, to perform. Well, you know, one of the advantages of being Poet Laureate, it gets you in places. Well, they knew that I worshipped Rosemary Clooney, the people putting it on. They saw that I was first in line to go backstage. Now, behind me was Herb Albert, all these big opera people and music producers to meet her. But I was first in line. And I went in, and I told her my stories about how Mama did me and all that and how much I loved her. And she loved it. I mean, she was sitting down because she was gotten caught large. Before I left, she got up and she hugged me and said, I love you, Maggie. And they said that she never said that to another person in line. But it was personal to her, see. I had worshipped her. And she died not long ago. She was from Maysville, Kentucky. And I just thought, oh, when she was singing those songs that she did was... And she did a country album, too. Country songs, Hillbilly Voice or something like that, she did. And they were the old Hank Williams songs and... Well, I'll tell you a Hank Williams story.
Yeah, that's correct.
Minnie was just full of stories, and she would tell me stories. And Hank Williams Sr. had a drinking problem. And he would show up the Opry drunk. And so finally they said, okay, we're giving you one more chance this Saturday night. And if you show up drunk, that's it. So he did. He showed up drinking. And Minnie thought, oh, no, this is going to be the end of him. So he put him in the car, and Minnie and Hank got in the back seat, and they rode him around the streets of Nashville trying to sober him up. Well, of course, his big hit at that time was I Saw the Light. And she kept talking to Hank. She said, come on, Hank, you gotta sober up. And she said, look to the light, Hank, look to the light. And he said, there ain't no light, Minnie, there ain't no light. Oh. I mean, it's hard for me to tell these stories because they touch my heart. Oh, she had so many stories. It was just, it was incredible that she would tell me. And Hank, as far as I'm concerned, Hank Williams is considered the Shakespeare of country music. The song, did you ever see a robin weep when leaves begin to die? He means his loss, his will to live. I'm so lonesome I could cry. The silence of a falling star lights up a purple sky. I mean, those kind of lines. I mean, you see that. And he wrote those. He had a third grade education. And, I mean, he could write. See, when you write from the heart, it comes from the heart. And that song, I think, is just pure poetry. And, of course, Cheating Hearts is a famous one, you know, because everybody's cheating. Country music is cheating on it. I don't know if everybody was cheating, but a lot of them were. Not necessarily the music stars, but the audience. And, you know, it kind of started up in the Appalachians. People sitting on the porch, poor. The only piece of art they had on the wall was the Lord's Supper. And they'd tell stories. And they'd get old homemade banjos and fiddles out, and they'd play and sing. And that music moved toward Nashville. And it was stories of people. Well, I think it was in 1925, the government allowed about five or six stations in America to go clear channel. Because, see, they signed off at five or six at sundown. Well, people in Pennsylvania and all that, they had no entertaining or entertainment. So they, WSM was one of them. Well, of course, Saturday night, they had the country music. Now, here's this old guy from working all weekend in the, or week in the coal mine. Got the radio on. And someone gets up and they sing about someone who, his wife ran off with another man, you know. And he thought, Lord, I didn't know they knew me. I mean, he thought they were singing about him. People related to it. And they all did. And the songs, and that's my life they're singing. And that's why it became so huge. People, it was their lives. And that's why it's so popular. Now, today, they're not singing a lot of the old country stuff, and I hate that, because the new stuff doesn't say anything. It's just the same words over and over and over, like the rock stuff. There's a few still singing it. I hope it's going to come back, because that's all I know how to write, that old beer-drinking, heartbroken stuff, you know. But that's country music. They wrote your life. But that's how it got to be so popular, that the people out there said, let me turn that on. Lord, I didn't know they knew me. They wrote my life. Because people were getting divorced back then, especially the people who's having a hard life, and the women didn't want to be married to them anymore, you know. And Hank, I mean, he just had that gift to write. Now, Fred Rose, he was writing for Acuff Rose, and Fred kind of helped him polish a little bit. But he had the song, you know, and I consider him one of the greatest poets that's ever lived. Everybody understood him. He went under the name, too, of Luke the Drifter, and that's where he did recitations, all recitations. And I've done two CDs of recitations because of him. I did them back in the 60s, so... people say, Lord, Maggie, that doesn't sound like you now. I said, well, I recorded these before my breast fell. Only I didn't say breast. I love recitations. And Hank, oh my God, he did like Pictures from Life's Other Side, you know, and Be Careful of Stones That You Throw. And they're all talking. Porter Wagoner did a lot of them. Recitations. You don't hear them much anymore. They ought to keep putting them out, you know, because people loved them. But there is nothing like country music. I grew up on it. I'll die on it. They'll be playing it. Leona Williams recorded a song called Yes, Ma'am, He Found Me in a Honky-Tonk. And that's going to be done at my funeral, along with probably In the Garden. But it's going to be some old drinking songs on there too, honey, because that's what life's about. And I think, yes, ma'am, that song this woman is saying to a woman, because she's going with his son, her son, the woman doesn't approve of her. And she said, well, just someone like your loving son helped me, show me how. Talked about being in the honky-tonks. I've been in a few myself, honey. Woo! Lord.
Maggie, that book right on top?
Yeah.
Voices?
This is an anthology that I put together years ago with Southern writers. Now, the Bicentennial Poems in here.
Are we okay in time?
Well, honey, I can talk all night. Mama, you just say I was vaccinated with a Victrola needle. Let me find it here with my name. It's under my name. I'm real proud of this poem. It's hanging in all the courthouses and schools and lawyers' offices. It's the official Bicentennial Poem. I'm trying to find it here. It's in this book, I'm pretty sure. I've got to find my name. Yeah, here it is. You know, today, everybody says who we are. Everybody. But in the 80s, I wrote this poem before people were saying who we are. And it's titled, Who We Are. And it's about Tennessee. Find it here. Here we are.
Okay, microphone.
Okay. Who We Are, the Bicentennial of Tennessee, 1796 to 1996. Fertile soil of Tennessee grew more than corn, tobacco, and cotton. It grew a crop of people who are trailblazers, child raisers, flag wavers, soul savers. Like the roots of the tulip poplar, our feet are planted deeply into good living, neighbor giving, God fearing. Like the iris, buttercup, and wild daisies, our towns have sprung up in valleys, basins, mountains, plains, and plateaus that hold cabins, mansions, and hillside chateaus. With a one-room schoolhouse in the holler, we're the university grad and the front porch scholar. We're David Crockett at the Alamo, Sergeant York, World War and War hero. We're Cordell Hull, who served Roosevelt. We're Chief Sequoia in his Cherokee alphabet. We're Ida B. Wells and the Civil Rights News and Grand Ole Opry with old wooden pews. We're Rocky Top and Tennessee Waltz the same with Star Spangled Banner before the game. We're country church sing-alongs. We're hand clappers, toe tappers, knee slappers, and mama's lap lullaby nappers. We're Jackson Johnson and James K. Polk. We're city slickers and Boar Hill folk. We're Ann Dallas Dudley and the suffrage vote. We're John Sevier, Don Tunquist, and governors galore. We're Congressman Bears and Vice President Gore. We're Wilma Rudolph, run for the goal. We're Sunday's golfers, 18th hole. We're Christmas Eve and 4th of July. We're TVA Rivers. We're Sunday golfers. We're Christmas Eve and 4th of July. We're 4-H and homemade chess pies. We're TVA rivers, creeks, and man-made lakes. We're all religions, breeds, and people of race. We're Tennesseans who love the home place. We're the volunteer state. We'll always be ready to go when someone's in need. As our trees turn green and our barns turn gray, we celebrate our 200th birthday. We know we've done our best, stood the test, and we'll be laid to rest in the fertile soil of Tennessee. Honey, this took me to every town in Tennessee, and it's in all the schoolhouses, and I read it at the Bicentennial. Gore was sitting behind me. Had Gore gone in as president, he was going to have me the poet on the Capitol steps reading the inauguration poem. Boy, that'd have been something. But you know what? I've been successful in this way, and I'm happy. I'm not greedy.
You know what's interesting about your bicentennial poem?
What's that?
Totally timeless.
Yeah,
it's as relevant today
as it will 100 years from now.
As when you wrote it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, because I want it to be that way, to where it'll live forever. Mm-hmm. And it is in the courthouses, and it's unbelievable the places I had to go and do it. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we had a bicentennial thing here at the, we have a plaza here and a park with a bicentennial park.
In Bell Buckle?
No, it's in Nashville.
Oh, in Nashville.
And I did it there.
Okay.
And people were on the hillsides. And I mean, there was thousands of people there. They stood and cheered. I mean, see, they got it. Mm-hmm. They related to it. And so many poets, they try to write images that you have to have a PhD to figure it out. Well, people don't want that. They want what I write. Unless they're PhDs themselves. And most of them like what I write. You know, they just don't admit it.
Yeah.
They buy the books. I write simple images. Country music images. I don't know. That's the way my brain and heart work. And I wouldn't take anything for my life. It's been hard. We grew up pretty poor. And hard times. Mama worked 7 days a week. And one thing, Mama always took a nap on Sunday afternoon. She worked on Sunday mornings at a bakery, held her there. Then she'd come home and take a nap because she'd worked 6 days a week. My brother and I would go down and talk to the prisoners. We loved that. And see, we'd see a matinee on Saturday at the movies. And we got those ideas about prisoners breaking out and all that. So we'd go down and we'd say, "We're going to spring you." We'd be outside talking through the bars. And I got a rope, and I tied it to the bars, and I tied it to a freight train. And all of a sudden, that freight train started up, and that rope broke, and nearly cut our heads off. I mean, bang. And the jailer came out and said, Vones, he called us the Vones, come inside. It's safer for you to be inside than outside. So we was going to spring the prisoners. I mean, we got into everything.
How old were you when you were doing that?
Oh, I was about probably ninth grade, somewhere along in there. I wasn't smart. They gave me an IQ test. And honest to God, you're not supposed to be able to fail an IQ test, but I did. And they talked about how important it is. They had someone come in and give it to us. And I thought, oh, my Lord, if it's that important, what will I do? And so she says, now I'm going to yell start, and I'll say stop. So she yells start. And I wrote Margaret Britton Vaughn on there where it says name. And I realized it said last name first, middle name first name. And I thought, oh, golly, I erased it. And I wrote it Vaughn Margaret Britton and or something like that. And then I realized it said print. So I erased it again. Well, she yelled, stop. And I hadn't even got my name on the front cover yet. Everybody else had gone on through the front section. So then one of the sections was this is to this is this is to this. You know, you have to hold it up. I can't do those, you know. And it was hard. And those old problem things where Johnny is standing under a pine tree. The pine tree is 317 feet tall. Planes flying over 600 miles an hour. It's 3 p.m. How much changes in Johnny's left pocket? Well, honey, I can't even read it, much less answer it. So I failed it. It's impossible to fail, but I failed it. So about a month later, Miss Coleman was her name. She was the counselor. Called us in one at a time, and her head was down like this, and I knew, oh. She says, well, Margaret, you didn't do so hot on your IQ test, but she said, that's okay. She said, you scored higher than anybody in the history of this school on the CUDA preference test, and the CUDA preference test, it shows you what you should do in life. By answering questions and shading in things. She said, no one scored that high. And she said, I've seen you write your poems. She said, that's what you need to pursue. And so I said, thank you, and I walked out. Well, a few months later, it's time to pick a college. And she was helping people. And she called me in. And she says, I've gotten you a scholarship in music to a college. It was a junior college. And I said, but you said I couldn't even pass the IQ test. She said, it has nothing to do with it. She said, you've got music in you. I'm a student band director. And I went to the college for 2 years, and I went on to a senior college. Mississippi Southern was. But Berkiston Junior College. And it was the happiest 2 years of my life. And everybody that was there at that time said it was the happiest 2 years of their life. And the biggest compliment I've ever received in my life, and I've really received some nice things, I go back now and then to see teachers. And there was a music teacher and a literature teacher. They were elderly. And they shared a home there on the campus. And I always looked them up. And they looked at me and they said, Maggie, when you left, the music stopped. And I said, oh, no, there's a band and there's a choir. I was in all that. They said, no, the music stopped. It took me a while to figure out what they were saying, you know. Now, that's pretty nice, because most people tell me I'm so dumb I'd never make it. And I'll never forget that. I mean, they're all dead now. Most of the classmates are. But those 2 years were happy years. I had a scholarship, and I had a scholarship when I went on into Southern, Mississippi Southern, because I was in the band. Played clarinet. So they were good years. You know, you don't have a lot of responsibility when you're in college, except to try to pass. And I couldn't pass biology. Took it 13 times. 13 times, never passed it. One time we had to look under the microscope, each one of us. And we had a microscope and a slide. And we had to name the parts of the slide. Well, I had 26 parts, you know, I named. And a couple of days she brought them back and she says, Maggie Vaughn, she was elderly, you have drawn 26 parts of a crack in your slide. That I had a crack in it. It cracked. And I thought it was something on it, you know. I had a posterior and an anus and everything hung on a crack. And it made the newspaper, the paper there in town. They laughed so hard. So I stayed in mischief. And I was in the band all the 4 years of college and marched in Mardi Gras band. And I don't know. I've had a good life. I've had a fulfilled life here. People are wonderful to you here. And they take care of you. Heather's in here. She and a friend of her friend have a coffee shop. They fix me my lunch every day and bring it. And I have to have chocolate chip cookies, although I'm very diabetic. But I think, well, if I go out, I'll go out with a sweet ass. You know, I got to have my sweets, yeah. Hershey bars and all that. So it's been good. The things that I've been through my life, I've had hard times and good times, sad times, happy times. I've had all the times you can have. And I wouldn't take anything from my life. I don't know how much longer I got, but honey, I'm going to write till they put me in the big hole in the ground.
I love it. You know what, Maggie? I'm going to come back, but for now I'm going to say goodbye.
Okay, we're going to do a farewell.
For tonight.
All right, yeah. Honey. Well,
but what a wonderful evening. Thank
well,
you.
Well, thank you. I can talk you to death.
Give me a try.
Well, I can. I just talk. You can ask any of my friends. I talk all the time. And I can't help it. Mama used to say I was vaccinated with a Victrola record needle. Vaccinated with a Victrola needle. Because I talked all the time. I stayed in trouble in school for talking in class.
Poet Laureate. Yeah. The state of Tennessee. I love it.
26 years.
To learn more about Maggie's world, you have a website, or how does somebody find out about you?
I'm on Facebook, but I found out today I've been hacked. Now, I don't know what you do for that. Do you know? You can fix it? Because my friends are texting me saying, Maggie, you've been hacked. We know you didn't say this, and I don't think I did, you know. And I can't remember what I was talking about 2 minutes ago, but I'm pretty good about not hurting anybody's feelings. But I can if I want to. I can tell you off, honey. I can outcuss any sailor that ever stepped off the boat in San Diego when I want to. I try not to, though, you know.
Maggie,
yeah.
Sing us out of here. Tell them about the Laughing Mule.
Oh. Oh, Lord.
What's this?
They had an old mule in town, and it was sick, and everybody was checking on it. And so I think I was at Webb then substituting, and I came back to check on him. It was in a vacant field over here a couple of blocks, and he was lying on the ground grinning. And I thought, well, he's okay. So I went into the antique mall where the woman owned it, and I said, oh, the mule's going to be okay. It's grinning. And she said, that's because we shot it. I thought, oh, God, you know. They tend to do their mouth up after they're shot. Well, I thought he was happy and grinning.
Maybe that, got
you know, I got stories like you won't believe, honey. You need to come live with me a while. Lord, honey. I'm crazy.
All right, well, Maggie, I'm going to sign off.
Okay, thank you, and it's great meeting you and the people you brought. And you're welcome in Bellbuckle. You just ask anybody in Bellbuckle. You're welcome here anytime.
Thank you so much.
And we love people, and we love talking to people, and we take care of each other, and that's the main thing.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and Iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes, and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolff, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust preservation initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
Boys are up. And the first number on this Wall Ride program on the Grand Ole Opry, Little Maggie. Bill and Earl will do it.
Oh, yonder town.